Welcome back to episode 148. Joe, how you doing?
Just fine, Tim. How are you?
Very well, Joe. Well, tonight we agreed to talk about evidence of a conspiracy regarding the COVID-19 scamdemic, as it's now coming to call it, like the scamdemic, crony virus, plandemic, panicdemic, whatever, operation, whatever it is. So here we are, and we've done a lot of talk about this, you know, undermining the case that it is a serious, you know, public health issue, or rather just a cover for something else or a number of things. You know, since the coronavirus began, politicians throughout the West, they looked to China as an example, because China cracked down allegedly and kind of sealed everything off. And the World Health Organization praised China's measures at the same time discouraged closing off China from traveling or accepting people from China nation. So there's a contradiction there. But basically they shut down the West has shut down their economies in order to supposed to contain this novel coronavirus. Here we are, I guess how many weeks, 6 weeks into it. And now we can kind of compare, and we do have counter examples of countries that didn't lock down. Sweden, even within the United States, you have states that didn't. And as we can see now, is the states that didn't lock down fared marginally better in terms of the disease, the spreading, this alleged disease that exists. So basically, the lockdowns were unnecessary from an epidemiological public health standpoint. So why do governments do it? That's the big question. It created a mass panic, the rush lockdowns. Now, my position is the lockdowns created the justification, because the lockdown created the idea that there was indeed something serious going on, a real pandemic. So it's more or less the effect proving the cause. So now we have a situation, you know, where millions of Americans and millions of people throughout the world, tens of millions, maybe perhaps hundreds of millions, have been thrown out of work, and may not know where their next meal is going to come from, or really nervous about their future. If you think about how bad it is in the United States, in the third world, where countries, you know, very service oriented day to day, they work day to day, live day to day. And when they're thrown out of work, they're suddenly cut off from any, you know, food support. They don't have unemployment benefits or any social safety net. So this has happened in India, where reportedly tens of millions of people are on the move, causing not only a public health crisis, but possibly, you know, you have millions will die because of this. And of course, it's not being reported throughout the West. So the question is, was COVID-19 a deliberate attempt to undermine the U.S. economy in order to achieve not only some sort of financial coup, but also a political coup? Some say that there's been a technocratic coup in the United States where people like Fauci and his benefactor Gates, the World Health Organization, has been running policy in the United States. Of course, Bill Gates is the biggest donor, single donor to WHO through the Gates Foundation after the United States pulled out. And it was, I think he is one who was instrumental in getting Tedros Adhanom, the current director of WHO, installed. So we have that connection. But nevertheless, the experts that we're told to listen to, which we followed with the crackdown, they've all been proven wrong. Their models were wrong. And they admitted, well, their models were wrong. Oh, well. it's close enough for government work, as they say. We have, you know, the economy, right, even to this day, you know, the entire Western world's economies are shut down for a virus that hasn't proven to be any more lethal than the seasonal flu. flu rather. So why do we, you know, we locked, when do we lock down global economies for the flu? So there's got to be another reason for this. And tonight we can maybe make the case that there's been a conspiracy, a network of special interest that helped create the crisis and stands to benefit greatly from the crisis. You know, the question is, you know, now can President Trump reopen the economy? Well, no, because actually it was shut down for the most part by mayors and governors. But nevertheless, the president has immense power if he wants to exercise it. It seems like Trump doesn't want to do that for whatever reason. But just simply under the Commerce Clause, you know, you could look at the various state lockdowns as interference with interstate commerce, not also violations of the federal constitution and also the various states' constitutions. The federal constitution guarantees the existence of a Republican form of government in each and every state, and these state constitutions also have bills of rights that protect people's civil liberties that are being violated every day by these alleged lockdowns, which are legally dubious. So I've yet to see any real court challenge to them, but we do have had some court rulings about churches not being allowed to be open, which is, again, a direct violation of the First Amendment, right to free exercise of religion, and the right to free assembly. So you have gross violations of the Constitution, both state and federal. And, of course, we live in an age, you know, with federal intervention in the states, for example, voting rights acts, and also integrating schools in these things, universities and high schools, that it was perfectly fine for federal marshals to go in and federal troops to enforce that. So we have that precedent. So if people's rights are being violated, the federal government now have the authority to go in and stop that. And you could make the case for that. But that's, you know, that's probably a digression. As to the evidence of a conspiracy, we have cited that, of course, yeah, as I alluded to, that there's a direct funding between the World Health Organization, the CDC, Bill Gates, and of course the CDC's connections to the big pharma, big pharmaceutical companies. The CDC itself owns as many as 20 patents. It sells $4 billion a year in vaccines. So it's big business. So there's evidence for that. Now, when we talk about conspiracy, what does that mean? There was an article I caught on was posted at CNBC, written by Tom Huddleston Jr., and he writes, the title is Bill Gates is the top target for coronavirus conspiracy theories. This is dated April 17th, and it says, Bill Gates has been one of the most outspoken public figures about the coronavirus pandemic. But the billionaire philanthropist and Microsoft co-founder has also become a leading target of various conspiracies that have popped up, or should be conspiracy theories, that have popped up around the spread of COVID-19. Conspiracy theories falsely linking Gates to the coronavirus origins in some way or another were mentioned 1.2 million times on television or social media from February to April, according to analysis by New York Times and Signal Labs, a media analytics company, released on Friday. That's roughly 33% more than the second most popular coronavirus conspiracy theory topic during that time, which linked 5G wireless technology with the viral pandemic. In fact, in April, conspiracy theories linking Gates to coronavirus included some claiming Gates had prior knowledge that there would be a coronavirus pandemic, or another claiming the billionaire wanted to implant the global population with a vaccine microchip to fight the COVID-19 disease. Peaked at 18,000 mentions on TV and social media per day, according to Signal Labs. Gates is a regular presence in television and podcast interviews, in which he's weighed in on the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation $250 million pledge to help the world develop an effective coronavirus vaccine. He's also at times been critical of the timing of the U.S. government's response to the global pandemic. Conspiracy theorists have also seized on the fact that Gates has been outspoken about the broader threat of global pandemic could pose for several years, with some claiming that the fact is evidence that the billionaire knew specifically about the coronavirus ahead of time. For example, Gates, who has reportedly stockpiled food in his basement to prepare for a pandemic, according to his wife Melinda, gave a TED Talk speech in 2015 warning people that an infectious virus was a greater risk to humanity than nuclear war. On YouTube, popular videos falsely linking Gates to a spread of the coronavirus has been shared millions of times, and the Times noted, while Signal Labs found that more than 16,000 Facebook posts spreading misinformation about Gates and coronavirus were liked and commented on about 900,000 times. YouTube and Facebook responded to the Times report by noting that the companies were working to stop misinformation about the coronavirus platforms. Meanwhile, Gates himself declined to comment for the Times report. However, Mark Sussman, the chief executive of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, told the newspaper, "It is distressing that there are people spreading misinformation when we should all be looking for ways to collaborate and save lives." Well, okay, so they're denying it, but the piece denies that Bill Gates wants to microchip everybody. He openly talks about a nano tattoo. Bill Gates has openly suggested or proposed this as a condition for getting back to normal as he sees it. Mandatory vaccines and also a nano tattoo that would implant some sort of electronic device that could be read by a smartphone to show that you've been vaccinated by his vaccine cocktail that he promises to develop. So again, that article is typical where they misrepresent the idea of a conspiracy. They oversimplify it where I don't think most people aren't thinking that Bill Gates is perhaps, you know, the head of the octopus or the spider in the center of the web. He's part of it, of course, a big part of it. If you look into it, there's evidence of various government white papers talking about planning to convert the economy to an AI economy, bring in more of this technocratic control with total surveillance, the doing away with what they call legacy institutions or whatever. With basically, it's like personally owned vehicles going shopping. And these are papers that were written a year or two before. You have the various, you know, again, we do have the various, like Event 201, these drills that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the Johns Hopkins University, working with, again, the World Economic Forum, this is the Davos crowd, where they, in October of 2000, as recently as October of 2019, they gamed almost an identical scenario. Go back a few more years with the Rockefeller Foundation, Operation Lockstep, and their papers predicting a very similar scenario with the world economy crashing and these things. So this stuff has been anticipated, written about, and lo and behold, it's happened. Although it really hasn't happened, because at least in those scenarios, there's a real pandemic. Whereas in this case, there was a panic about a declared pandemic. But as I mentioned earlier, the numbers simply don't demonstrate anything worse than the seasonal flu. And of course, we've talked about how these numbers are all cooked because of what they've done with the death certificates. They've more or less they've borrowed or they've mixed in other deaths, comorbidity, and blamed it all on the coronavirus. They've gotten very vague with death certificates, which is a reversal of CDC policy with the coronavirus. And not to mention the fact that the test, they produce a lot of false positives. There's no reliable test and these things. And they have yet to really isolate the virus. So there's a problem of that. So the tests that they cite and the numbers, whether it's the infection rate, morbidity rate, or the mortality rate, is completely unreliable. In fact, not only is it unreliable, not that it's undercounted, it's heavily overcounted. So they've created an atmosphere of a pandemic to create the panic to justify the so-called overreaction that we're all living under right now, which is the lockdown of the U.S. economy, which now they're, as a condition for reopening, they're saying we have to then subject ourselves or submit to Bill Gates's mandatory jab, immunization papers, all types of controls, full monitoring. There's all types of plans for new companies and software development in our phones to have tracking, 24/7 tracking to make sure we don't talk to each other, get too close to one another. So the whole thing is being this technocratic agenda is now is being rolled out as a condition for reopening the economy. And it just happened, all these supposed solutions, these problems have been on the shelf for years. And lo and behold, a crisis comes and now they have an excuse to implement it and impose it on anybody. So that's a brief overview. We can get into some of these details that I have here about some of these planning. What do you have to say, Joe?
Well, first I'd like to digress and mention that there is a bright light that has shone through the darkness of the last couple of weeks, and I wanted to let everyone know about it. There is an attorney in New York named Patricia Finn, F-I-N-N, Irish Catholic, I believe, and She has an organization that's called the Good Health Lawyer, and they won a case, basically sort of underlying the right of the doctor to make the final decision on vaccination. And this will have some pretty broad ramifications, perhaps. But I just wanted to mention her. I've been in communication with her this week, and I just think that she's exactly the kind of person and skill that we need to support now more than ever, because I really want to avoid Bill Gates's RNA vaccinations by legal mandate, And so I never solicit money, but I would just say, if there are people out there who are anxious to do something, contact Patricia Finn's website, check out what she's doing, and she has big plans and has. So that's something that people can do to basically try to head off mandatory vaccinations. Patricia Finn, she's just a great person. And she's fighting against a conspiracy, obviously. The reason why there isn't just a universal understanding that it's conspiracy is simply because there is this compartmentalization, and it's hard for people to see the whole context of this event relating to, past history. And they will try to defeat the specific charge against Gates, right? And if they can take this to a neutral place or negate some of the charges as being not quite accurate, then it's, well, they're at the end, that's the end of the conspiracy, right? But it's all, that's just a technique that is used to keep people from thinking clearly, because you really have to look at the whole context of the coronavirus pandemic and the government response. We have to look at everything. And I think if you take that broad perspective, it's obvious that it is a conspiracy. And this is obvious because you have now, you certainly have enough data to understand that the disease is not basically has a level of lethality that justifies this kind of a lockdown. I mean, that's just in the data now. There was an article that came out this morning. It was called "The Data Is In: Stop the Panic and End the Total Isolation," and it was, by doctors who have now, realized that the government fear porn is incorrect, and they're trying to recreate a social policy through this thing that basically doesn't have the draconian lockdowns. So the first thing is, you can see now that they are avoiding the mentioning of the science and the doctors and the statisticians and the epidemiologic community that are now all weighing in. There was like about, gee whiz, maybe six studies that came out this last week, and they all said the same thing, that this is basically has the mortality numbers of the flu, right? It's hardly any different. There was like just so many studies, and they all had the same thing. This is the flu, basically, in terms of its damage potential to society. So since that is in, where is the discussion of this from the politicians who are organizing lockdown? Where is the demand from the media to the politicians to explain the unconstitutional lockdown now that the data shows that the basically the carnage and the catastrophe? I mean, you recall the first model, the one that was used, that was going to have 5 million US people dead and or more. That was like the low end of the potential. So, now it's not even going to be, tiny fraction of this. And so you'd think there would be some discussion of that. And of course, some reversing of the political policy. So, but both the media and the government are in cooperation. Moreover, there is a core of scientists, particularly Fauci, but I would lump Gates in this regard as well, because people see him in this light. And yet none of them in their public comments are bringing up the new data that has come forward that is empirical data, right? We've got now 60 days of U.S. Data in terms of COVID-19, and yet none of the scientists who were the basis for the lockdown are switching gears. Now, this looks very based. It raises the question. And when you have this number of elements that are all refusing to make this obvious tack, this obvious change of direction, what other explanation can there be other than they simply want to continue to use this to promote the agenda that was created, as you know, as they claim they were going to defend us from? So what you have, you know, with COVID-19 is a technologic slave state, right? You're seeing drones, all of these, and of course, you know, just the very nature of it, the social distancing, the wearing masks, the state shelter in place. I mean, these are all basically things that would be aspects of a slave state. These aren't things that would appear in a, you know, in a constitutional democracy, right? So you've got just the first direction given to the public would be aspects that would plug into a technologic slave state, and are not social behaviors of continuing, you know, to go forward in a free democracy run by a constitution. And I'll just digress and say, you know, over and over, I've been hearing the last week people, you know, media people talking about we can never go back. It'll take years to go back. You know, they all have these conditions that you pointed out. But some of them are saying it's impossible. We can never go back. This one guy was saying we're going to have to redesign the freeways in Los Angeles because of the coronavirus. I'm serious. I mean, literally. And he was like, you know, some bureaucrat. Now, you know, so.
This is because you have hundreds of thousands of dead in California, right?
Yeah, they're just, the bodies are piling up, yeah. Tim. I've got like a whole pile here next to my den. You know, the thing is, bear in mind that.
This is the MIT white paper said that we can't go back. It would never be the same. So if MIT says it, you know, regardless of what the facts are.
But you see, it all fits. So it is a non sequitur, right? When you are, you know, familiar with data and logic, you know, you have to ask the question of why. Why, when you have both Belarus and Sweden clearly, basically heading toward a very good place, really, in relationship to the virus, or not having extraordinary death numbers, and yet had no economic lockdowns, right? Two countries, each of them over 10 million people. Well, why isn't that the most important data point that the media is both touting to calm the hysteria in the public and also questioning about the political class on about, well, why are you keeping the lockdown going on now that there's hard data that it's unnecessary?
And here's another point is they say that the lockdown has resulted in the lower numbers. They're trying to give credit to that, take credit for that. But the problem is when they said when they imposed lockdowns, they said those numbers would be there with the lockdowns. It wasn't
right.
If we don't, of course, do this, and, yeah. And
they're going to be catastrophic. It was going to be a complete, like, you know, an atomic war that we lost, basically. You know, that we were risking 20% of the population in one hysterical paper I read. So there was hysteria, and in that zone, you can understand the behavior, and it looks almost rational, right? That, okay, so they're not evil people, they're just panicked, and they're going to give us this temporary maneuver, which will only last for a very brief period of time, and then we're going to go back to the Constitution. But now, even though the reality of the disease is totally different than the one that they gave us to create the panic, oh my gosh, none of the technologic slave state aspects are being removed. They're not talking about we've got to really get back to the Constitution, to the right of assembly, free association. You don't hear any of this. You hear about, well, we're going to need drones to make sure of, protecting against social violators of social distancing. And what's really, I think, particularly both frightening and irritating is they talk about the need for tracing.
Yes.
That everyone will have to be tested. Everyone will have to have this paper, which will be created by a bureaucrat, which will go into a computer. And then if you're not chipped, you'll have to at least carry this thing. Otherwise, you can't, travel around freely. Well, again, this is a non sequitur because the virus, I mean, if you actually go through the data, you can see that for young people, they don't spread the disease. If you're under 18, I don't know if you've been looking at the kind of the current research that's coming out, particularly out of the European countries. They're going, hey, if you're under 18, you're not spreading the virus to anybody, period. Just isn't happening. They had several instances of kids who had it that were in constant contact with thousands of other kids and didn't spread it to a single other person. So this is the idea that we would have to have our children tagged is, again, it's a non sequitur. It makes no sense. There's no particular reason for it. And then, of course, if you get under 50, well, now you have one person in 1,000.
Was it the, I think one of the guys out there in California, public safety officer, or maybe head of transportation out there, referred to individuals or people as bioweapons or biohazards, walking right. Biohazards.
Bioweapons. I mean, he was using the language of yeah. terrorism. In other words, and again, this just goes right into the idea of this is a justification. So I mean, let's to be clear, the pandemic was used from the very beginning in terms of the what I call the fear porn, the creating of high levels of panic in the public, the deliberate creation of this emotion. This was used from the very beginning to create a condition in which that the public could be confused about the slave state, the technologic slave state that was being implemented.
Well, this is funny because you see this, never before has that been a standard for epidemiology or contagion or epidemic control, because nowhere has ever said you may go out and infect somebody that now you can be quarantined because you may go out and infect somebody. You may even be asymptomatic. You may go out and infect somebody who then infects somebody who then infects somebody who then infects somebody who gets really sick and dies. I mean, that's highly speculative. So now there comes this outrageous standard to pretty much put everyone under house arrest. It's almost like, how, measles and became scary for people, whereas just a generation before it was considered a trivial childhood illness that children almost encouraged to get because it built their immune system, get it over with. And how people with memory go, hey, wait a second, what changed? Now, all of a sudden, now we're supposed to be accept the fact that because we may be carrying something that now we have to lock ourselves away, whereas in the past, if someone is immunocompromised or vulnerable, they take precautions themselves, which is much more reasonable and more just if you think about it.
Well, it leads to a much better society because
it's workable at least because their model is impossible. Yeah.
I mean, it's impossible except in the context of a technological slave state.
Yes, that's what it's all
because,
about.
And the thing is, all of this stuff is just nonsense. They don't, when this guy talks about you're a bioweapon, I mean, basically he's designating you as a terrorist. And of course, we're used to extraordinary legal consequences for terrorists.
Exactly. And that's funny because a few weeks ago, I made the case about, the infectious disease narrative and how they've weaponized the germ theory to kind of make us all be like potential bioweapons. And now here he is using that term. I used it a few weeks ago. He's actually using it.
I mean, that's amazing. It was quite prescient. But you can see the logic for the slave masters in that they have got the concept of terrorism established in the minds of the public. And so by identifying the potential carrier of a mild flu-like disorder as a terrorist, then the public is less likely to see the implementation of the technologic slave state.
And also the whole notion of sheltering in place, ordering you to stay at home. Of course, that was rolled out in Boston in 2013 with the Boston Marathon bombing, when in search of one terrorist, allegedly, they told everyone, the entire city of Boston, to shelter in place.
Yeah, and so what they're doing here is they are wrecking our minds for a very long period. In other words, all of the horror films in conjunction with pornography, in conjunction with multicultural philosophies, have just basically discombobulated, particularly, like European Americans, mm-hmm. right? And so when this occurs, when you start to transition into a technologic slave state, that some of them are enough, evidently, so that you're not having pitched battles in the street yet, are actually confused about it. I mean, frankly, I am just amazed that there's any confusion. I honestly am, particularly among thinking people. I mean, when you're in Trader Joe's and you look at the humans that are, they're not in a healthy state, they're social distancing and they've got masks on. Of course, I'm not singling out Trader Joe's as having debilitated clients, but there are a lot of people that I know are like, they're very rational. They're into books, reading. They regard themselves as intelligent people. And yet some of these people are not seeing. And I just can't believe it. I just go, really? You really think that like Gavin Newsom, who, was talking about how we're not going to be moved by protests, we're just going to stick with the science.
Mm-hmm. Right?
He's sticking with the science. What science is he sticking with at this point? Because all of the models, I mean, literally all of the models that this was based upon are gone. I mean, this was really an important thing that occurred in
Well, Joe, science isn't about being exact. Science is an art.
Yeah, I know. You should have seen me in my chemistry class. You would have really believed that. But the point is that you had the models. I mean, the Imperial College model, the famous one that was just fear porn. Oh my God, this is going to wipe us out.
Yeah, 2.2 million Americans, 500,000
okay, so I was just gonna,
Brits. Yeah.
Well, those models have now absolutely collapsed because the data that came in this last week, and it wasn't just one study, Tim, it was, I think, about six studies, all of them large, highly scientific, and they all had the same thing. They all had the same thing, that the high level of lethality was a byproduct of sample selection error, it's called, whereby they would take everyone who was symptomatic and like basically do the ratio of that, of the fraction of those that died, and this would be how deadly this disease is.
Which is ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous. And they were saying, well, it's just the best data we have, and we have to use it. But in fact, as it turns out, if you went through all the papers that came out this week, the percent of asymptomatic people was orders of magnitude. But
isn't that what that hot mic issue with John Roberts at Fox News was? Isn't that what he was referring to?
The danger. Yeah, I don't know. You've got such.
Yeah, you heard that hot mic thing where he called it a hoax.
Yeah, I was interested in that. I wondered if that was like a setup, but
then they pulled the video.
That makes it seem real, but certainly the conversation was real. I mean, it was based upon something that happened. The California study that he was referring to, mm-hmm. The Santa Clara study, was very clear cut, and I had actually been, touting this because there was a contradicting model that came out of Oxford almost immediately after the Imperial College one. It was, like I mentioned, it's Sunetta Gupta. She's a viral statistician. I don't know what the title is, but she was saying that the Imperial College model was bunk because it doesn't take into account the percentages of the population that are already with the virus. And now she has been proven to be 100% right. Anyway, long-winded. I'm just saying that the data is in. It's in.
Is she the recipient of Gates Foundation funding?
No, no, she's not. Okay. And isn't that odd?
Because, that very case you're talking about, there was an article written by Vanessa Bailey for the UK column. And it's who controls the British government response to COVID-19? And she writes, who steered the UK government towards this questionable and alarmist lockdown policy? The unexamined assumption is that conclusions were formed on the basis of sound epidemiological analysis and research by doctors and scientists who care about our welfare. The reality is what we will examine in this article. Neil Ferguson, a professor at Imperial College, was responsible for modeling of the response to COVID-19. His virtual model was recommended to the World Health, or sorry, by the World Health Organization, and it passed through into policy with virtual no scrutiny. Ferguson's dramatic prediction of 500,000 deaths in the UK became the foundation of Boris Johnson's U-turn from a herd immunity to collective quarantine. And she asked, who is Neil Ferguson? Well, Ferguson is acting director of the Vaccine Impact Modeling Consortium, which is based at the Imperial College in London. According to Ferguson's biography on the website, much of his work is applied in forming disease control policy making by public and global health institutions. Ferguson was instrumental in modeling of the British government's response to foot and mouth disease in 2001, which Thrushfield describes as not fit for purpose and seriously flawed. Thrushfield has highlighted the limitations of Ferguson's mathematical modeling methods and applied the doubts he expressed over FMD to the current COVID-19 crisis response. An estimated 12 million animals were slaughtered as a result of Ferguson's 2001 initiative. The farming community was devastated by suicides and bankruptcies that irretrievably altered the landscape of British agriculture, forcing healthy small holdings into agri-corporate mergers and empowering the EU central governance in the agriculture sector. There's your motive. The man that advised Tony Blair, during this fiasco was, many will know, Professor Ferguson's of Imperial College. He was reportedly sacked during the epidemic, but the damage had been done. Professor Ferguson was awarded an OBE in 2002 for his work during the foot and mouth disease crisis of 2001. That's the order of the British Empire. So he's given a medal for it, even though he was sacked for screwing up. Now, of course, again, did he screw up? What was his true mission? That's where this isn't incompetence. In 2002, Ferguson predicted that up to 50,000 people would die from the variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, better known as mad cow disease, increasing to 150,000 if the epidemic expanded to include sheep. The reality is, since 1990, 178 people in the UK have died, according to the National CJD Research Surveillance Unit of the University of Edinburgh. In 2005, Ferguson claimed that up to 200 million people would be killed by bird flu or H5N1. By early 2006, WHO had only linked 78 deaths to the crisis out of 147 reported cases. In 2009, Ferguson and his team at Imperial College advised the government that swine flu or H1N1 would probably kill 65,000 people in the UK. In the end, swine flu claimed the lives of 457 people in the UK. Now, in 2020, Ferguson and Imperial College have released a report which claims that 500,000 Britons and 2.2 million Americans may be killed by COVID-19. The report has still not yet been peer-reviewed. Despite this and Ferguson's glaring record of mathematical sensationalism, the British government has adopted a devastating socioeconomic lockdown that Ferguson has proposed. And she goes on in this article linking Imperial College to Gavi and the Gates Foundation. So there's a recipient. And this, he's also, again, does this global vaccine action plan, which is tied in with Gates. So all this fear-mongering is done not out of incompetence or panicky or he just forgot to carry the one or something. No, this is he creates the panic to justify the lockdown, to justify what we see sort of with the economy and also what we see now Gates now proposing. And that's Vanessa Bailey at the UK column. But she makes the point that all these organizations are tied in with the British government and Big Pharma, and they're set to profit mightily from it. She calls this philanthrocapitalism. So, also ID 2020, which ties in the Gates, the Rockefeller Foundation, basically the ID 2020 is a great thing because ID 2020 says that we have a right to be able to prove who we are. It's a fundamental human right to prove who we are, to identify ourselves. Really? That kind of twists, because I thought it was a fundamental right for anonymity and privacy.
we have a fundamental right to be able to prove who we are.
Yeah, it's like to show our papers.
Well, Debbie Ashton, what happens if you fail? I guess I'm no longer who I thought I was.
Yeah, is that Chuck's, funny?
So this is sophistry. It's a non sequitur. I mean, it's literally, it's so illogical. You have to go, what the heck? This can't be, you know, this can't be real.
So the basis for the initial panic ties in with Gavi, the Gates Foundation, the World Health Organization, the primary, benefactor of which is now Bill Gates. So,
it's funny because, you know me, I look at sort of an organization that basically is moving us toward a technologic slave state. And this organization, I would say, is satanic. That's a, you know, way I've characterized it often over the last almost 3 years now, Jim. I wanted just to give some visual aids for people to see the perspective I have in regards to this. The first one was Bill Gates putting out a Microsoft advertisement, kind of a company art vision, using our famous spirit cooker, Maria Abramovich. I don't know if you saw the ad.
I heard about that. I haven't seen it. Didn't they pull it?
Yeah, they pulled it because just people were going a little berserk. But, I mean, you have to think about how really over the top this is, because if you look into the spirit cooking, we've talked about this in the past. It's too long a digression. But, I mean, basically, this is Aleister Crowley. I mean, this is just Satanism, in lumps here, right? It's Thelema. So for Gates to accidentally bring this person out at this time is a little weird. And you know the date that he actually aired this, Tim?
What's it with that?
It was on Good Friday. So you can see the the juxtaposition here. I mean, bear in mind, it's sort of like the burning of Notre Dame when you go, well, gee, it's strange. Of Notre Dame, like of 300 years ago or something. So you can see that that these dates, particularly relating to Christianity, are in play, and this is what, you know, is animating this group to bring these things out. And then I'll just one more of my favorite visuals, so people can really see the kind of a cover of the book entitled "The Corona Conspiracy." In the same week that Gates came out with the, I think it was the same week actually, but I'm not positive about that, but I think it is. In the same week, a photo came into public domain of Jacob Rothschild and Marina Abramovich side by side, almost arm in arm. And they were standing in front of a painting was entitled "Satan Summons His Legions."
Well,
this has the naked, very graphic, pornographic representation of Satan, and it was painted by Lawrence, who had been the president of the Royal Society. I mean, just Freemason deluxe. And so, I don't think this is a coincidence. I think this is their, legacy representation. I mean, this to them is a satanic movement whereby their control over the world is going to be increased, and if we don't fight it, it will be, we have to fight the incremental reduction of our freedoms because Satan is summoning his legions against us at this very moment. And we really don't want to let Maria Abramovich become, HEW secretary, because I think we would have like a pretty, kind of grim world. So
she was National Endowment for the Arts or something. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
There's another thing as this Gates connection is we're all familiar with the lockdown order in Britain. Of course, this is inspired in the United States. The United States responded to this Ferguson study. And, the president, Trump, didn't order it. He said he gave rhetorical support for it, declaring it an emergency. Then it was implemented at the state level with governors and mayors. Well, here's an interesting article that I caught, and this involves this is regarding Oregon and their shutdown. And I ran into this article at the Occidental Observer by George McKenzie. An Oregon governor advised Bill Gates and patent lawyer. Oregon governor advised by Bill Gates and patent lawyers. And who is advising our governor? Who are these experts who issued the latest projection of disease trajectory in Oregon? They are from Washington State, the Institute of Disease Modeling in Bellevue, Washington, computer models. Of course, they claim the aggressive interventions prevented the spread and flattened the curve, or else we would have had four times as many cases and the healthcare system would have been overburdened. Okay, the Institute of Disease Modeling. The exact document which informs the governor's executive orders locking down Oregon is titled COVID-19 Intervention Effectiveness and Epidemic Trends for Oregon, a Model Basis Analysis. We can see the logo at the bottom of every page. They say, this is the Institute for Disease Modeling, they say, at this stage, any relaxation of the current aggressive control measures is likely to result in epidemic resurgence. IDM confirms the wisdom of aggressive interventions, and the recommendations include the urgent need to enormously increase testing capacity, detailed contact tracing, and likely quarantining of infected individuals away from households. The authors, this is interesting, the authors, the following names are listed as the authors of the document from the Washington Modeling Center making aggressive pronouncements and recommendations for Oregon. Cliff Kerr, Brittany Hagedorn, Dina Mystery, Daniel Klein. Three of these four, excepting Mystery, are listed as authors of the document, informing and advising in Washington State. Another co-author of that document, Hao Hu, is listed as representing the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, according to LinkedIn, as the interim senior program officer at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation of the Greater Seattle Area Philanthropy. There's, okay, now let's go with Cliff Kerr. Dr. Kerr has worked extensively in human neurological and brain systems, interface with machines, including one project with DARPA, interesting. And in 2017-2018, Kerr used a grant from the Gates Foundation of over $155,000 to identify optimal spending portfolios for investments made by Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation with a particular focus on emerging medical technologies, interesting. Brittany Hagedorn, the co-author, is a senior financial analyst at IDM. She co-authored six research publications, one in 2020 and the rest in 2019, four published in the journal Vaccine, all focused on vaccine cost effectiveness and all from her position IDM. Two of her papers rely on data drawn from the Global Polio Eradication Initiative, which receives its funding directly from the Gates Foundation, as well as many other source Gates funds, such as the World Health Organization. Gates is now number one donor. UNICEF, Gavi, Gates is the major donor of that, of course. Then there's Dina Mystery. Dina Mystery is a postdoctoral research scientist at IDM. Her work there focuses on modeling human responses or response to disease awareness and the impact that this has on disease spreading using digital signals of health information and communication, such as Google, Twitter, Reddit, to model disease awareness and response. In other words, surveilling our internet activity to track our exposure to spreading disease. The papers were published through Cornell University, of which Gates is a big donor. Daniel Klein. Klein is listed as a senior research manager at IDM. He helps develop the computer models and algorithms IDM uses to predict disease progression, like those which produced graphs our Oregon governor is using to justify the continued aggressive measures. Even though Klein joined IDM in 2010, during 2018, he led various science and strategy initiatives as a senior program officer and global development strategy, data, and analytics team at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Klein co-authors of his most recent papers are both from the University of Washington, Seattle. Gates is a huge funder of the institution with over $1.6 million just this year and enormous funding going back to over a decade. Earlier paper Klein was, he wrote with Hua Hu, is a co-author who was already known as the direct recipient of Gates funding. Of course, the studies they cite were all from China, not very reliable. The Institute for Disease Modeling gets a lot of its money from, you guessed it, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. IDM is an organization within the Global Good Fund, which is entirely funded by Gates. It's the other corporation that collaborates with Gates on the Institute for Disease Modeling is Intellectual Ventures. Intellectual Ventures is an American private company that centers on development and licensing of intellectual property. Intellectual Ventures is of the top five owners of U.S. patents as of 2001. His business model has a focus on buying patents and aggregating them into a large patent portfolio and licensing these patents to third parties. Global Good is so intertwined with intellectual ventures, that the GG logo says underneath ideas of intellectual ventures. Intellectual Ventures is active in spinning off new companies as it acquires patents, and their pace is accelerating. One of these spinoffs in 2018 is a Carillon Technologies, a military contractor to aid national security and government contractors. Carillon investors include Bill Gates, co-founder of Microsoft. Many of other spinoffs is Terra Power, which provides safe and affordable carbon-free energy. It's nuclear. Chairman of the board, Bill Gates. So he writes the conclusion. The co-founders of the Institution of Disease Modeling are the world's most currently hated man, Bill Gates, for declaring lockdowns, having to continue until he develops and deploys his new untested RNA vaccine worldwide, and big-time patent lawyers, corporate CEOs, and tech spinoff experts at Intellectual Ventures. These people are in it for the money and power, not Oregon's public health. These are the experts from which Governor Brown is getting her advice in running Oregon during the state of emergency. Gates and a bunch of corporate patent lawyers and mad scientists who want to vaccinate and chip the world. These are the technocrats trying to profit and seize power by imposing technological solutions they invent and sell. And you can take Oregon, and you probably, if you looked at all the other states, 40 or so other states that did this, you can probably find similar connections. So that's interesting right there. That should be looked into.
Well, I mean, it's self-evident. I mean, it can look into it, but it's clear, isn't it? I mean, what Gates has done is the same thing that the Rockefeller Foundation did, in the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century.
They took over the General Education Board, yeah.
They just took over all of the boards so that information about medicine was going to come through them. And you know, when you see that, and then you look at Gates, the current iteration of the world's smartest, most wealthy individual, you know, you can see the trajectory. Again, I always say, look at the context. And when you look at Gates and Rockefeller taking over all of these boards, controlling, and particularly when they both have the same idea about depopulation, right? I mean, it's a very clear picture. And so... I hope that it's too clear, you know. And to me, it isn't like the conspiracy is. Our subject for tonight. I don't really think it's difficult to prove. I think it's just the opposite. It's almost impossible to avoid to not see. And because of that, because it's so ham-handed, and because Gates has been such a horrible actor, he just comes across so as such an evil, self-absorbed individual. I mean, it is possible that this exercise, which was going to lead them into their brave new world technologic slave state, is just going to blow up in their face because it's that horrible. I mean, I'm just the correspondence I'm getting is just all one-way traffic. Everyone, even it doesn't matter if, you know, to what level of the whole overall conspiratorial world we live in someone had, they can see there's something wrong with this, and they can see that Gates' participation in this just stinks.
I'm trying to gauge normie opinion on this because you know, we tend to live in a echo chamber sometimes, and
yeah.
So, to the extent that this kind of maybe not the specifics, but a general understanding of the the malice behind this. You know, that they're, yeah. So we can discredit the, like I said, you have to go back and discredit the entire thing. And, I have to see people, just average people not wearing masks anymore.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, in our community, which was never really a hard lockdown, but 3 weeks ago, if you went to the beach, which were open, everyone was wearing masks. I took a walk yesterday. It was a hot day, which is, I guess, to some extent, attenuating, but no one was wearing masks. And I mean, I saw over 1,000 people and there was almost no social distancing. No one was paying any attention to that either.
Yeah.
Because the public has created a verdict, at least here in Santa Barbara, they have a verdict in terms of the fear porn. It was fake. And because of that, because the whole population basically knows that, I mean, we've had 5 deaths in our county, which has about 800,000 people. So 5 deaths. But in every case, there was comorbidity,
yes.
Right? Or I'm not sure in every case, but I mean, the only one where there wasn't, the guy was like 75. So there was no young, healthy person that has died or even been really sick from it. Maybe that's not true. Maybe one person was in the ICU, but it's hard to get the data. But anyway, so it's so trivial. It is so much like a flu season that the public has made the decision. They're not wearing masks. They don't seem afraid. And they're not social distancing. They're like in groups and things. And so now in conjunction with that, which I think that this is, you know, not, I don't think we're unusual or, you know, psychologically unusual. I think that's kind of going to be sort of normal now. There's also the fact that a number of states are opening up.
Yeah.
And these are, you know, these will be examples. I'm sure there'll be a surge and, you know, once people are out, there'll be people who will be more infected for a period of time. But because of the more recent data showing that so many people already have it and see the this concept is a little hard to get one's head around. But the fact is, in many places, the people who are going to die have already died, or at least a larger fraction of them than the baseline population. They're the most vulnerable, the people in the you know, old folks' homes, the people who have comorbidity factors. And this was the point of the first paper that was contradicting the imperial model. And the woman was saying that, well, based on the number of these old people that have died, and she knew that that was going to be the fraction of the population that was going to have mortality, she goes, we're not like 1/100th of the way through it. We've got like hundreds of thousands of people been exposed to the virus. And so this is why I think when they open up the states, I think you'll have a rise in the number, but ultimately not a very big rise in the mortality, because the old people, a lot of them have unfortunately already gotten it. That's just how flu epidemics work. The first, you know, the first onset is the worst, and it hits old people and people who are, you know, without the right immune systems. And so we'll see. I mean, this is just a, you know, a conjecture on my part based on the data. But in any case, the overall reality is just transparent. I mean, Sweden, Belarus, the recent studies, and I think you're going to see the, when the states open up, that everything is just, is nothing is going to be going into anything close to the Imperial College hysteria. And so now you're going to have a situation where the public will have to rise to the occasion, because the public has to make a decision, right? Because it's going to be facing the second phase of this operation, which is economic shutdown. We're going to be out of the, you know, of the viral shutdown, but now you're going to be walking out when they open the states up to an America with 30 million unemployed.
Yes,
and with business, you know, locked down. It won't be the public anymore; it's the businesses. So the public will need to make a decision about what has been done to them, and this is where the alt media has to really raise its voice. And I'm actually, you know, I'm kind of optimistic about this because of the reaction to Gates. I mean, I think 2 months ago, he was generally held either neutral or positive by most Americans. I think he's had a collapse of popularity because of his, like, overselling the vaccines. It's too transparent.
And the nano tattoo.
And the nano tattoo. That's a little tip of like what the guy's like. So anyway, I think that I'm hoping that this will embolden the public, and they will say, you know, something that we have, we were basically, you know, taken deliberately off a cliff, and that when we try to reorganize our economy, we need to reorganize our political world.
You're rethinking institutions like the banking and Federal Reserve System.
Well, that's all part of it. But one thing for sure is, like you mentioned last week, is we have to change a lot of political, you know, types that were the ones who led us off of the cliff. People like Gil Garcetti, the L.A. mayor, Gavin Newsom. I mean, the list is a long
Cuomo,
one.
Cuomo,
of course. I mean, these are the best known. But all of these guys have to be removed from office. That is just – and I think – I could be wrong, but I think it may be doable. because of the fact that when we transition it from the fear into the anger phase, that and when you make that transition, that's when new thinking can occur. And I think that's when the left-right paradigm, you know, mind control will be at the, you know, will have the least control over people.
Yeah, and, you know? And don't suppress your anger. Use that anger, because it's justified anger. Yeah. Anger is justified sometimes.
Right, and so then you get out there and you make sure that everyone that you know votes these guys out, and that you make darn sure that the person you're replacing them with is representing different interests.
And demand a criminal investigation.
Oh, my God, absolutely. You know, this is absolutely critical, in my opinion. We have to bring, if we get any kind of a transition of political power, the thing we need to do is to get people like Gavin Newsom and Garcetti, the L.A. mayor. I mean, he's the one who, you know, he says, you know, we're tracking with, you know, like the smartphones, we're mm-hmm. tracking. And we're able to find anyone who's violating, you know, like any kind of unusual business activity. We've got 99%, you know, like under control. But that extra 1%, we're going to shut off their water and power.
Hunt them down. Didn't say hunt them down.
So okay. So, I mean, this is draconian. And, I mean, you know, you can make the case that, well, he is insane. I mean, that is okay, you know, because he was just the fear drove him over the edge. But it's also possible that he is representing evil. Mm-hmm. And in a trial, you would be able to get him to give his rationale. And the public could see if it's believable or not, that this guy really thought he was doing something good rather than trying to implement the technologic slave state.
Well, that's when these governors, and perhaps even some of the mayors, some of them just following orders. But John Rappaport made the point that these governors, they're beholden to a foreign power, and who they're beholden to is effectively the World Health Organization, which is a UN organization, which is a Rockefeller outfit, Rockefeller Rothschild outfit. I mean, the land, I mean, obviously, Turtle Bay, New York, the land was donated by the Rockefellers, it was created by the Rockefellers, it was created by the banking interest. And that's, these governors that are doing this are beholden to that power. And that's how you have to look at these guys and gals, and you know they're the enemy, and they should be treated as such. We are called to defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, as far as the people goes, the way you end it is you just declare it over and you start ignoring the orders. And I talked to you about that, the mother who was arrested in Idaho for taking her kid to the park by the cops, and then there's a protest outside City Hall. I like to see that protest go to maybe a few thousand people and really hold the police accountable for that, the police chief, I mean, even the officers involved. And then if you go to that park, maybe you should a few hundred or even a thousand mothers show up with their kids. The cops can't enforce the order anymore. You nullify the order just by not following anymore. And I told a friend of mine, I said, listen, the Berlin Wall didn't come down because the government took it down. It came down because the people showed up and started jumping on it and started just, taking it apart themselves, dismantling it themselves. And the government backed down and the government went away. And that's at some point, the citizens have to make that choice. When the government takes your freedoms, they never give it back voluntarily. They have to be taken back. And one way is to simply ignore them to the extent you can. You really, and you do it in mass, it works. Because if you're just one person there, you get arrested. But you overwhelm them. And then what happens is the politicians will pick up on this and thinking it's popular, they'll climb aboard the galloping horse and claim they're the leaders. So you can use the politicians to get what you want, is what really democracy is supposed to be about, I suppose. But I'm saying that's how you do it, something like this. That's how you reverse the situation.
That's the right approach. You've got a problem that the media and the political class, you know, are part of the secret society, yes, at least to some extent. And so you have this, with their collusion, you know, they can make one another seem reasonable. But that's why a trial is such a great thing, mm-hmm, because then you can actually go through the details and get them to explain. I mean, you know, Newsom says that, we're not, you know, what happened was yesterday in California, there was a protest. And now what the response is they're saying, well, The protesters ignored the permit requirement of safety. They weren't social distancing. We saw a number of them without masks. So we're going to end issuing permits for protests on public property.
Well, then you just don't ask for permits anymore.
Well, that's the thing.
Because the implied permit isn't there to withhold you. It's there to make sure that arrangements are made for public safety. It isn't there to suppress free speech.
Well, and that's a correct understanding, but you need to do that en masse, because if like 10 guys do it, you rest assured the CHP will come and arrest you. So you have to anticipate that. In other words, the movement, the protests that occurred a couple of days ago was too big. There were 1,000 people. They couldn't really do anything with it.
Yeah.
They then issued their intimidation decision about how they're not issuing permits anymore, so that you are now, if you're going to go to a public place and protest the lockdown, you'll be violating the law.
A violation of the right to free assembly.
Of course. Yeah. And so this, I don't think that this will slow down the anger. And so...
I think it was in Michigan, you had the governor, Gretchen Whitmore.
Yeah.
Whitmore said, I saw they were endangering people, they were spreading disease, and I saw a Confederate flag.
Oh, no.
And then you had Congresswoman Dingell, who I think is either the daughter-in-law or daughter of John Dingell, the long-serving governor out there, or a congressman out there, a man out there. But she goes... I saw her, she was doing an interview. Goes, it was awful. They were handing candy out to children without wearing gloves. And I saw a swastika.
Yeah, so
it turns out the swastika was with the governor's name next to it.
Yeah, what a shock!
So completely misrepresenting. You know, obviously, you know, it wasn't the American Nazi Party showed up to engage in the protest.
They were accusing the government of
that. Yes, it's like,
but this was that she tried to turn it up. See, I just think could be wrong, but I mean this is kind of the ham-handed and witless intimidation of the multicultural media that has been successful because Americans were free enough so that they weren't really kind of questioning anything really.
Yeah.
But now that they're locked down, this is a new environment, and I don't think that kind of crap's going to work. I think I also think it's like the CHP saying no permits issued for demonstrations of old policy. That's just going to make people mad,
yeah.
Even more angry. Now,
I mean, you do work for us, right? I mean,
yeah, right. That's right.
Oh well, actually, they don't.
But anyway, so you're not a Praetorian Guard, are you? I mean, it's yeah. So. Anyways,
we are.
Anyway, so this coming week, I think you're going to see more reports coming out. I understand that Sweden is going to have a real blockbuster come out on April the 30th.
Yeah, they were trying to pressure Sweden to implement the same things because they didn't want the counter-narrative or counter-example.
Right, yeah. And of course, the exact same thing has happened in Belarus where the curves are no different in terms of mortalities.
Yeah, he was referred to as a strongman, a dictator,
And he referred to the lockdown as mass hysteria.
Apparently, the dictator is saying, go out, live your life, go to work.
Yeah.
He's a dictator, but our democratic governors are telling people to stay shelter in place, don't go outside, and issuing illegal orders. So who's the dictator?
Exactly. And that's just, it's like Gavin Newsom saying, we're going to just be motivated by science. And let me tell you, over the next week, you're going to have a lot of science come out. I think there's going to be more reports. I think it's going to get absolutely clearer and clearer that the COVID is nothing. It's a flu season. And the question as to why we're locked down is going to get larger and larger.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be very interesting. I really wonder about this. I kind of think that maybe they were hoping that their little bioweapon was more effective. Like you were saying last week, that it's hard to control these things. You design them and then you send them loose and they just don't work like they're supposed to. And I just wonder if maybe the little people got lucky once here, because they may have been of a mind that they were going to get a 5% fatality or 2%, just some grotesque number. And then they would say, hey, we just need to have these, technologic methods in place. I know you're enslaved, but at least you don't have to worry about the virus.
Well, yeah, especially it comes out that the Wuhan Institute was funded by Fauci's NIH.
Yeah.
And well, it was a university in North Carolina. And so basically the U.S. had outsourced its bioweapon research to China. So it's real convoluted, but it appears... I think a lot of the stuff is created. The whole bioweapon research is there to create the appearance of bioweapons to justify the whole thing. Research, then vaccines and these things. It's like a complex. It's like the bioweapon complex and all this research money and these things. And to create the idea that there is a bioweapon out there, so we need countermeasures and these things. And I just
think that they don't have enough to really turn the mind of the public into acceptance of the technologic slave state. They just didn't get there.
Well, this is interesting because I know we're getting late in the show, but I wanted to mention this one thing is was a post by Whitney Webb, who she's a journalist for The Last Vagabond.
Yeah.
This is the article, Techno-Tyranny, How the U.S. National Security State is Using Coronavirus to Fulfill an Orwellian Vision. And she writes, last year, a government commission called for the U.S. to adopt, this is last year, to adopt an AI-driven mass surveillance system far beyond that is used in any country in order to ensure America hegemony in artificial intelligence. Now, many of the obstacles they have cited as preventing the implementation are rapidly being removed under the guise of combating the coronavirus crisis. Last year, a U.S. government body dedicated to examining how artificial intelligence can address the national security defense needs of the United States discussed in detail the structural changes that the American economy and society must undergo in order to ensure a technological advantage over China. According to a recent document acquired through a Freedom of Information request, this document suggests that the U.S. follow China's lead and even surpass them in many aspects related to AI-driven technologies, particularly their use of mass surveillance. The FOIA document was obtained by the Electronic Privacy Information Center, was produced by a little known U.S. government organization called the National Security Commission on Artificial Intelligence, NSCAI. The NSCAI is a key part of the government's response to what is often referred to as the coming fourth industrial revolution, which has been described as a revolution characterized by discontinuous technological development in areas like artificial intelligence, big data, fifth-generation telecommunications networking, nanotechnology, and biotechnology, robotics, the Internet of Things, and quantum computing. The recently released document is a May 2019 presentation entitled Chinese Tech Landscape Overview. Throughout the presentation, the NSCAI promotes the overhaul of the U.S. economy and the way of life as necessary for allowing the U.S. to ensure its hold holds a considerable technological advantage over China, and losing this advantage is currently deemed a major national security issue by the U.S. national security apparatus. The U.S. government and establishment media outlets have often blamed Chinese espionage or Chinese government's more explicit partnership with private technology companies in support of their claim that the U.S. is losing this advantage over China. For instance, Chris Darby, the current CEO of the CIA's Intutel, who is also on the NSCIA, told CBS News last year that China is the U.S.'s main competitor in terms of technology, and the U.S. privacy laws were hampering the U.S. capacity to counter China in this regard. That's interesting. So basically our Bill of Rights and right to privacy and these things, Fourth Amendment. In fact, the national security apparatus of the United States is so concerned about losing a technological edge over China that the Pentagon recently decided to join forces directly with the U.S. intelligence community in order to get in front of Chinese advances in artificial intelligence. In addition to alleged shortcomings of the U.S., what they call legacy systems, kind of like how we live, the lack of extreme urban density, the NSCA calls for more explicit government support and involvement as a means to speed up adoption of these systems in the United States. This includes the government lending its stores of data on civilians to train AI, especially citing facial recognition databases and mandating that cities be architected around AVs, autonomous vehicles. So they're driverless cars. So all this is being supported. What will replace U.S. legacy systems? Given that the document makes it quite clear that legacy systems in the U.S. are impeding its ability to prevent China from leapfrogging ahead in AI and then dominating it for the foreseeable future, it also is important to examine that the document suggests should what should replace legacy systems in the United States. As previously mentioned, one legacy system cited early on in the presentation is the main means of payment for most Americans, cash and credit card debit cards. The presentation asserts, in contrast to legacy systems, the best and most advanced system is moving entirely to smartphone-based digital wallets. Another legacy system seeks to overhaul its car ownership, as it promotes autonomous and self-driving vehicles and further asserts that fleet ownership, individual ownership, it especially points to a need for a centralized ride-sharing network, which it says is needed to coordinate cars to achieve near 100% utilization rates. However, it warns that ride-sharing networks that need a human operator paired with each vehicle, and also asserts fleet ownership makes more sense than individual car ownership, but also specifically calls for the fleets to not only be composed of self-driving cars, but electric cars. And City Insight reports that China has the world's most aggressive electric vehicle goals and seek to lead in the emerging industry. In addition to this vision of future financial system and the future of self-driving transport system, the NSCAI also has a similar dystopian vision for the surveillance. The document calls for mass surveillance, one of the first and best computers customers for AI, and a killer application for deep learning. It also states that having streets carpeted with cameras is good infrastructure. So there's a also notable is that the InQtel and the U.S. intelligence community has considerable representation on the NSCAI, and that almost all boast close ties with Google, Palantir, and Silicon Valley giants. So basically, this document calls for this overhaul of the U.S. economy, or way of life, getting rid of personal and vehicles. Also, legacy systems, also like shopping, stores, retail outlets. So they boost, think, online buying and all this. So all this is, of course, is being accelerated or being strongly encouraged by this supposed pandemic, because we are told we can't do these things. Stay shelter in place. Don't go out. They're making shopping much more inconvenient with capacity restrictions, social distancing. And you see this vision being fulfilled in the coronavirus. And this was just last year.
Hey, it's a conspiracy, brother.
And that was an article by Whitney Webb at The Last Vagabond.
Yeah, well said. Well written, yeah.
So we have all these things. So from this, I think we could infer that there's some collusion going on here, perhaps, and maybe some crisis that's being exploited, if not created.
Yes, we can conclude that.
We just have to draw the schematic, right?
We're drawing it.
So, okay, Joe, anything else?
It's been a pleasure, and it'll be great to have another topic, but I have a feeling that next week we'll still be in crisis, so we'll see, huh?
I see, as things unfold, yeah. So, okay, well, enjoy that hot weather out there.
Yeah, it's scorching. All right, Tim, you have a great weekend.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.